You are listening to the podcast That's Life in Sweden, or as we say in Swedish, Sånt är livet i Sverige, with me, your host, Lisa Orsimäki. The mobile from Helsinki, Finland, Olli Valo. He is an educator and the CEO, co-founder together with another colleague, a Finnish teacher, of Education Alliance Finland. Olli is particularly passionate about technology and firmly believes that technology has the potential of engaging and activating students in their learning. Hello, Olli, and welcome. How are you this morning?
Hi, Lisa. I'm good. I'm good. Had a good night's sleep, and I'm feeling well.
Good. I'm so happy to hear. You know, you have a very interesting background, and you are a teacher. And what made you become a teacher?
Okay. I'm a bit of a drifter. I think. By nature. So how I became a teacher was that I kind of half accidentally ended up working as an assistant in a school after I graduated from high school. This could be a bit of a long story, but I was supposed to go to army in July after I graduated from high school, but I couldn't go because they didn't have enough places for people to enter in July group. So they put me in January's group, and then I suddenly as a surprise I had few months in the fall that I didn't know what I'm gonna do. I didn't have a job. I didn't have a place to study. So I thought that it might be easy to get a job from a school. And I called to one of the school principals that I knew a bit, and he said that yeah, you can come to work in the school, and then I got introduced how it is to work as a teacher. I liked it, so I thought that maybe I tried to get a place to study to become a teacher, the university. It wasn't really like I had always wanted to be a teacher or something like I would have been super, super passionate about. But it was kind of partly like an easy choice and partly like a choice that I thought that this will take me somewhere. Let's see. And that's how I started studying, and I eventually started working as a teacher.
Right. And then you went to university. You decided to do a PhD.
Yeah, I didn't really like studying that much during the master's degree. At the end of my studies, I got more interested. I think one of the drivers that got me more engaged was scientific writing. So in Finland, when you study to become a teacher, you do the master's program. Like from the day one, you know that you're going to study about 5 years and you're going to do bachelor's thesis or bachelor's degree and then master's degree right after. And when I was writing bachelor's thesis, I did it about learning music and how to learn music in a more meaningful ways in school context. And then I got interested. I was quite excited about the topic, and probably because of that, I wanted to do good work with the bachelor's thesis. And then I got pretty interested in scientific writing, and then I sort of found better meaning for myself from the studies, and. Then when I continued writing master's thesis, I kind of liked I I'm not sure if this is completely true, but I started saying to people that this is probably the most interesting part of my studies when I'm writing the master's thesis. And I had done about 300 study credits by at that point. Then how I ended up, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to continue writing PhD theses. But at the same time, to be honest, I started working as a teacher first when I graduated. I was working about 2 years, and I also felt that I needed a getaway from being a teacher, and that PhD project provided me one. Mm-hmm. Not saying that I wasn't interested in the topic that I was doing the PhDs per se, and I truly enjoyed the process of collecting the data and all that, and the topic was learning music once again. This time with the help of computers, composing songs and learning music that way. So I was really excited about the topic as well. Mm-hmm. But it was also a getaway from being a teacher.
You're interested in music, you're composing music. How does that relate to writing an essay or a thesis?
Yeah, well, the connection is that I specialized in music, teaching music as well. So I did my minor in music or music education. I wasn't really happy with the ways how at the university we were taught to teach music to elementary school students. I felt that the approach was incredibly conservative. Mm. And I was really miserable. I had looked forward to this part of my studies a lot. It was super, super conservative, and I felt really miserable. And I felt that I really suck in music. That was the every time I went to these classes, I got that feeling.
Oh.
And then the image that I had in mind and how I had envisioned how I would be teaching music would be something joyful, something creative, something where, like, I imagined that in my music lessons, students would get to use their imagination and be creative and work together and play real instruments, play those songs that they like and make their own songs, and having that kind of activities, because that was my own musical background. I didn't receive any formal music teaching or music lessons. I didn't go to music school when I was younger. I learned by myself. So it was only out of joy and having fun. Every time I picked up an instrument, I did it because I wanted to have some fun. And then when I started to become a elementary school music teacher, I thought that this is not about having fun at all. And that way I got interested how to teach music in more creative ways, or ways that would spark more creativity in my students.
So what are your instruments? What do you play?
I started my musical music as a hobby when I was 11 years old, and our household got the first computer, like a real. We used to have Commodore 64, but after that my dad bought us this kind of like a real PC. And my brother got this music making software to work on that PC, and I started making songs. So I was doing or creating drum tracks, and I was creating bass tracks, and I was creating actual songs without having any knowledge how to play any instruments. And then when I was teenage, my father had noticed that this guy Olli is spending a lot of time composing songs on a computer. So he bought me a guitar as a surprise Christmas gift.
Mm.
I had not ever requested to get any instrument, or I didn't really have any interest towards instruments. I was happy doing songs with the computer. But I got the guitar, and I learned to play it quite fluently so that I was able to sing and play chords in about maybe 1 or 2 weeks. Okay. So that I learned really fast, and I think why I learned really fast was that I already had all that musical understanding in me, because I had been making those songs with a computer. So I learned to play guitar, then I really fast learned to play. I don't play any instrument well at all. I'm ashamed if somebody asked me to play like drums or piano or something like this. But I can play very many instruments in a way that if I record my playing and if I edit my playing with a computer, I can make it sound good enough. So I play guitar, drums, piano, bass, I can play.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking forward to some of your music.
Yeah. I can share some songs.
You know, you're interested in computers and composing music. That then also led you to your interest in digitalization overall, because you're also the co-founder of Education Alliance Finland. Can you give us a little bit of what's that all about?
Yeah. So my journey, how we started Education Alliance Finland, was that through my PhD project, before finalizing the PhDs, I got to work. I was hired to work in a company developing music learning platform. And through that, I sort of got introduced to educational technology. And when we were creating that music learning platform, we realized that it provided a new way for learning music, and it was kind of like a new kind of tool that schools were not so used to be using in classroom. And oftentimes when I was presenting or showing the tool to a teacher in an education fairs, for example, they were asking me that, okay, this looks like a nice tool, but how do you prove that this actually helps my students to learn anything? It looks like a fun activity, but how do you prove that it actually, the learning value is there? And I didn't, even though I was writing PhD thesis about using that tool in classroom, I wasn't able to do that sort of kind of like a clinical empirical study with certain conditions that I would be able to show empirical proof, that like with pre-test, post-test kind of thing, that this is what they learned through the use of our tool. I thought that it was impossible to set that kind of research up, because there are so many variables that affected not only our tool, but also how teachers were using it, what was the state of mind of the students, how the Wi-Fi was working, and 100 other things. So how would I replicate all that? So we were facing this problem with our company, and we noticed that me and my colleague in that company, she was also a teacher, we noticed that pretty much all the ed tech companies are facing the same problem. How do they prove that their tool is good? How do they prove that the tool actually has true impact? And we started thinking that there's a plethora of research, educational research, explaining that what are the elements that form a positive and effective learning experience. So there's a lot of learning theories that could be applied in the design of an edtech solution. And if those learning theories and pedagogical principles are applied in the design of the edtech solution, in the learning experience that the use of the edtech solution provides, then we could draw the conclusion that this tool is effective without having to test it or without having to sort of built that 2-year research where we do clinical study of the efficacy of that tool. So we wanted to come up with that kind of service, and that way we started Education Alliance Finland.
Now that's a fantastic way of developing an idea and to make it work. And the fact that you relied on research, and like you said, you applied the particular theories it was actually taking advantage of the research that was out there rather than you trying to figure it out, what do people want or what is needed in schools. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. That's we for example, in every country, for every school, there is a school curriculum that they need to follow. And for example, in Finland, the school curriculum is describing that what kind of learning experiences Finnish students should have in the school. So then you could take that curriculum and you can take that EdTech tool and you can look at the EdTech tool and analyze, is the use of this tool leading to provide this type of learning experiences in the school that the curriculum requires. And that way, if it does that, then you could say that this could be a valid tool for Finnish students. If it doesn't do that, then you could say that, no, this is not the valid tool for students.
So can you just, what is this called? What is this tool called?
So when we do these analyses of EdTech tools and EdTech products, the products that we analyze can be anything. We don't evaluate or assess admin tools. We assess those tools that affect on the pedagogy that is being practiced in the tool. It can be a learning application that provides, like a learning game, for example,
right,
that provides learning activities for students and provides feedback and guides the learning experience. And that sort of tools are quite easy to assess. Or it can be a platform or a tool that doesn't include any content, but it's up to the educator or the teacher or the student to create content with the tool. And this kind of tools can be used in any subject because the content depends on the, like, what the teacher wants to create with the tool. Those are a little bit more challenging to evaluate. But then again, nowadays, the methodology that we use when evaluating these tools, it has evolved and developed further so that it suits well for evaluating this type of tools as well.
So when you're talking about tools, we are talking about technical tools like apps or software programs or platforms. Is that?
Yeah. The majority of the evaluations that we do are for software applications, digital environments. I suppose that they are all more or less the same thing. I prefer to use term educational technology because it kind of includes everything, whether it being an app or browser-based software or software that you install on a computer. So EdTech tools mainly.
Got it. Yep. Great explanation. Now, you have a special interest in digital transformation and responding to the changing needs of the society. Can you explain what you mean and also some of the challenges, how technology is actually responding to the needs of schooling and education?
Yeah, sure. Well, when I was working as a teacher, I was continuously every day, every lesson, I was wondering about it, that the sort of setup that we have in schools, where you have 20 to 30 to 40 students in one classroom, and then most of the times there is one adult, the teacher, the educator, trainer, who is hosting the session and facilitating the learning experience. And if the lesson is planned really well and you manage to keep your students active all the time, the engagement is probably relatively fairly good and there are no big issues there, that like everything goes fluently. But when I was teaching, I realized it early on that if I spend all the time that I'm awake and not teaching, if I spend that planning my lessons for the next day or for the next week, I can't come up with that good activities and content and ideas for teaching all the time that I could keep my students that engaged. So that that led into a situation that even though I spent like a fairly big amount of time planning my lessons, still it happened all the time. Every day there was some hassle, something like bullying or some bad behavior or like every day something happened. And I was thinking that how on earth can I switch this setup to function in a way that I wouldn't have to deal with this kind of bad behavior every day, because it made me really, really frustrated. It didn't feel good to sort of be a little bit angry all the time just to avoid the situation that somebody does something bad. And I didn't have an answer when I was teaching, and then I got my getaway from being a teacher. And then when we were developing that music learning platform, I started hosting lessons. I was demonstrating. I was doing lots of these demo lessons with our tool in different schools. I probably visited more than 100 different classrooms or 100 different schools in Finland hosting lessons with it. And naturally, the lessons that I was hosting, those were planned really well, because I was hosting over and over again the few same lessons. But still, those lessons were amazing. It was pure joy to, as a teacher, as a host of the as hosting those lessons. When I went to a new school, regardless of how bad the students were behaving when they entered the classroom, I was 100% sure that everything's gonna go well during this lesson. And I think the reason why I knew that, and why every time everything went really well, was that it was so interesting, that the activities that my students were doing during those lessons were so interesting that it kept them 100% engaged from the first minute until the end of the lesson and even after that. And the reason why I saw that they were so engaged, and I didn't really have to plan that much, because the technological platform that we were using in this case, learning music, was providing them optimal challenges all the time. So when they were composing songs, they got to use their creativity. They were instructed effectively how to use it, how to make the songs. They were giving meaningful tasks, what they are supposed to do. And those tasks were, their challenge level was optimal in a way that it was always up to the student. Like if you were a musical genius, you were able to make better songs than maybe others. But if this was the first time for you doing some sort of musical activities, the bar was lower for you. Mm-hmm. And technology can really do that, because everyone had their own computer, everyone were doing their own piece. And they were also collaborating. I'm not sure if this is really true, but what I think I saw happening was that, because my students were really naturally using the software really well, and they sort of, I think I saw sort of a raise in their self-confidence that they were experts in using the software, because apparently they were using a lot of technology in their spare time as well. And when they were so good in finding and understanding different features of the software, they started helping each other. So it seemed to me that when we were using technology in the classroom and doing the activities with computers, if somebody had any problems, they rather asked their friend than asked from me. Mm-hmm. And that improved the spirit in the classroom. And there I saw that, okay, this is the kind of teaching I would like to do as a teacher. But I thought that largely why it worked so well was because we were using technology, and the tool that we were using was working really well.
And it was also, sorry to interrupt, but it was also because you trusted the students. And, you know, I like the idea when I hosted the sessions. We normally say, well, I taught the sessions. I'm a teacher, so I teach. But you actually, the word, you have switched around the word from teaching to hosting.
Oh, that's a good point. I did it unconsciously. Probably it just describes better my role in there. And I think that this is important in general when using technology. It very easily happens, if everything works well and the application that you're using in the classroom works well, it easily happens that your role as a teacher switches or changes from being the one who leads it to be the host or the facilitator of the learning experience. So you're there, but your role is not as centric as it would be if you would be doing like more conservative learning activities with books and something that doesn't provide you immediate feedback.
Yeah. And of course, like you said, it's an effective way to have kids, you know, and I love the idea that when you get kids excited and active, and they actually very helpful of each other if they don't understand something, and that raises their confidence, and that absolutely stops bullying. And it's fabulous. What a brilliant concept. And I absolutely like the idea of hosting. Tell me, what do you think is the problem today? Do we have teachers who lack knowledge in digital skills or digital literacy? Or why do we have, I don't know, in Finland, but there is still a kind of sense among many teachers, they're kind of scared of technology.
Yeah, I think it's every time when you start using a new application, we all know it's a bit of a struggle. Like if you would have proposed that let's take this call using an application called XYZ, and I would know the application beforehand, I would naturally think that, oh, can we do this with some application that I already know, or can't we do this the old way? Even though it might appear that this new application was fairly easy to use and it took about 2 minutes for me to learn how to make the call with that. But I think that this is a natural thing. And many times when you start using a new application, it's not that easy. And even though if I'm an office worker nowadays, if somebody tells me that, hey, use a new application for accounting or a new application for sending out invoices, it would probably take me 1 year to get used to that idea that I need to switch to start using this new application and think about it. Like I'm still doing all the stuff that I do with computers. I do alone. I don't have to do it in a way that, okay, I start using this application and I also need to make sure that 25 of my students are also fluent in using this right away. Mm-hmm. From the get-go, because if they are not fluent from the get-go, or if I'm not fluent in using this new application from the get-go as an educator, it leads to a tiny disaster potentially. People get frustrated. No, this is not working. I don't know how to log in. Teacher, can you help me? This is something that I don't want to face during my lesson. And this is still the situation that how the new technology in the classroom, how like this is the everyday reality. So I think it goes without saying that when you are expected to start switching away from offline learning into online learning and making sure that your students are fluently using different types of devices and using different types of learning materials and learning environments on those digital devices, it's a huge struggle, and it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't even happen in one class. It doesn't even happen in 1 year, or even probably not in 3-4 years. It takes a lot of time, and you need to introduce it, new tools and new ways for working with step by step.
Yes. Do you think there is you've heard this idea, I'm sure, of digital stress? I mean, we have gone, you know, we're still going through a pandemic and you know, there's a lot of research talking about digital stress, particularly among teachers who find it's, I don't necessarily know if people find technology difficult, but it's the overwhelming amount of technology that is constantly coming out, and there is so much to choose from that can confuse this idea. And when you just mentioned that it's about step-by-step learning a particular tool, and then you just find that, oh, well, we're not using that tool anymore, we're going to use this tool.
Yeah, and this is something that that schools, my understanding is that they're struggling with this a lot. That you get introduced to a new tool, you need a separate credentials for each of your students to use that tool. You use it a few times for one semester, and then somebody says that, hey, by the way, we're not using that tool anymore. We should start using another tool.
Yep.
And as a teacher, for sure, you get frustrated. It's not that systematic, and it's very understandable. It's not that systematic. The procurement of EdTech, the implementation of new EdTech tools, it's not systematic. We don't have any routine yet to do that. And it leads to a situation that you probably get tons of frustrated teachers saying that, I'm overwhelmed with all these tools and I would just rather do things in the old way.
Mm-hmm.
But still, how to convince them that, yeah, you can do things in the old way, but it's probably a bit of a disadvantage for your students then, because
But you know what? What you're actually saying is, I think there is something called that there is a misunderstanding among a lot of people, or particularly a lot of educators, understanding the idea of why we use technology. So if we turn it around and we talk about that we're using technical tools to support us and our students in their learning, exactly what you've been talking about with the music, you know, the hostings that you've done, using technology, engaging students, they're activated in learning. And I think as teachers and educators, we actually understood that technology is meant to support us. It is not meant to take over the role.
Yeah, definitely. And this is, at the end of the day, how effective the learning experience is that you provide as an educator or that you host as an educator to your students. It doesn't depend only on the tool itself. It's a combination of the tool, of the preferences of the educator, the preferences of the students, the skills levels, the personal interests and the moment and the infrastructure, and so it's only one particle in this big picture. And it's good to remember that as well, that it's only a tool, and it depends. Like, it's good also to provide autonomy for the teacher and the students to choose which tool they want to use.
Yes, exactly. And so teachers, those who are really into technology and they love this new development of continuously development of new software or programs, go ahead, but we should be respecting each other's knowledge and understanding and how we teach. And, you know, it's the autonomy of the teacher and how we use tools. But at the same time, we should not fear them. And I think that is what, that I've certainly seen examples of where teachers actually are afraid. Because there's so much to use. There's a lot of confusion about a lot of the terms in technology that continuously changes. Blended learning, hybrid learning, high flex learning, and teachers, what are these all terms? I thought blended learning meant this.
And I think that you're absolutely right about the language and the terminology. That's also really important. And I think that the EdTech developers and the learning solution developers could do a much better job in that area, because at the moment it feels like everybody wants to invent their own vocabulary, how to describe their product.
Exactly.
And you might visit websites of four different quiz tools or quiz platforms, and you might see that one platform, they call themselves a social collaboration tool, even though it's a quiz tool. Another might call themselves a gamification platform for learning. And third one comes up with their own unique vocabulary. And as a teacher, you just need a quiz tool, but you don't know what are the, are these quiz tools or not? These are some, like something else maybe, or this is something, of course it's understandable. We are in the very early stages of EdTech implementation, but still I would suggest that we should always consider try to find what are maybe the standard terms and use those.
Yes. And you know, the other one with that a lot of educators have a problem with, they think when they go into a classroom and, you know, we have, for example, now digital technology meant to, you know, cameras and the whole lot, you know, all these kind of tools. And the thing is that when a teacher turns something on and it doesn't work, the first thing the teacher will say, it's my fault. And that's another one, because they feel as though they need to understand the technology behind the tools, which it's simply impossible.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you have developed a technology, an ed tool, and why do I need to know how it is built?
Yeah, it is true, and I don't really know how to solve this issue, because at the same time, if the tool is not working, in a way, it's good that the educator is first thinking that, did I do something wrong? But then again, it's probably not the teacher's fault, and you should have a, I don't know if it's ever possible, but of course, in an ideal world, all of these EdTech tools and the tools that are being used in schools, those would work fluently and there would not be any issues at all. But then again, there are always some issues. So yes, how to support the teachers in these situations? I think that this is a big responsibility for the tech providers.
Yes, and a tech provider, every school should have a tech provider.
Yeah, and I remember once when I hosted a demo lesson with the music learning platform, and I left the school. I was hosting it in the ICT classroom. Back in the day, there used to be these separate ICT classrooms, schools with lots of PCs. I remember that there was one computer that had some issues with the plugin of the headphones plugin.
Right.
And because all of the students were composing songs in the same room, everyone was using the headphones. So I hosted the lesson. Then the teacher said that she's gonna continue. She's gonna have, like, she learned how to host the lessons with the tool, and she said that she's gonna host similar lessons to her own students during the afternoon. And I was already gone. So I was driving a car back to the office, and she calls me and says that, hey, Olli, there's some issue. I'm with the student now. He doesn't hear anything from his headphones. And I said that try to push the headphones plug-in a little bit tighter. And she tried to move it a bit. She moves it a bit and she says, oh, now it works. Thanks, bye. But this is the reality. She wouldn't have noticed it probably unless I had noticed it beforehand.
Yes.
And this is the kind of support, this is the level of support that you probably need to provide for your clients if you aim to sell your EdTech tool to be used in a school.
Absolutely. But you know, you have also you have also the thought that that technology, how technology is implemented in school is different from how technology is implemented in businesses.
There are definitely differences. I don't know what would be the like in office jobs, where your main like the biggest part of your day you spend in front of your laptop, and you're using different software throughout the whole day. So providing a new software in that situation is probably a bit easier than for if you provide a new software in schools, yeah, or in hospitals, for example, where you're in like the maybe the situation in hospitals and schools are somewhat the same, that you don't necessarily spend that much time in front of a laptop doing some like repetitive task using certain software, but you rather use the software more as a tool every now and then, yes, in order to get something done. And in that context, and in hospital, your clients are the patients whose needs are urgent, and in school, your clients are the students whose needs are urgent. If the need doesn't get fulfilled pretty much immediately, the situation will fall apart or something goes wrong. And in that kind of setup, I think it is, like you said, it is harder to introduce and implement new tools. It's more hectic in schools than it is in corporates, I suppose.
Yeah. In a LinkedIn post, which actually I became so interested in reading, is that by an article by Perna, I think it's Mark Perna who wrote this year, that there is an exodus of teachers in the US. And in your response, you actually wrote, in Finland, the situation is even worse, with 6 teachers out of 10 reported having considered to quit teaching. I was totally floored. I thought, what on earth is happening in Finland?
Yeah, this is according to research by the teachers union. So they put out the survey, I think it was September 2021, and 2,600 teachers replied, and 60% of those teachers, and they teachers from different education levels, from kindergartens to vocational education high schools, 60% of those teachers were said that I think during last 3 months they had considered quitting and starting another job. And it sparked a good conversation. I posted that on LinkedIn.
Yes.
It sparked a good conversation. One important point about that research that I didn't mention in the post was that they had done the same survey. I think it was done on previous year, and only a bit over 30% of teachers replied that they had considered quitting or starting to do some other job. And so the increase was maybe the most worrying news or very important part of the news and important part of the findings of the research. It sparked a good conversation. One colleague of mine, he had a good point that it should be looked in the context of how do people in other jobs reply to the same question. And he said that he thought that he had saw a similar type of news, that it was asked from people in general doing plenty of different jobs during the pandemic. It was asked that, have you considered changing job? And I think he said that about 50% had replied that, yes, I have been considering changing job. So compared to that, it's not as critical as it might seem, if we think about it.
I'm so glad you explained that, because I thought teachers who become teachers in Finland, I mean, it is, you know, it takes a long time to become a teacher. There's a lot of requirements. You know, the quality of teachers and teaching in Finland is at a level. And so what you actually, the explanation you given, wow, I'm so glad I asked you that question.
Yeah. It's something that we need to focus on and think further and pay attention to, like how motivated our teachers are. I think because at the end of the day, like I'm a parent as well, and I'm thinking that when our child goes to school, the most important thing for me as a parent is to know that the teacher of my child is motivated, that the teacher of my child is happily doing his or her work. And because at the end of the day, that the teacher is among probably top three people influencing the life of a child, along with parents. And if the teacher is unmotivated, if the teacher is not happy doing his or her work, it for sure it shows in the ways how it shows in the classroom spirit. So definitely, I think that this is really, really crucial thing, how to keep our teachers motivated and happy. And I think that there are several things that need to be done. But the way how my experience using technology in classrooms is that this could be one way to improve the atmosphere in classrooms for better for teachers, for students firstly, and consequently for teachers as well.
It's been absolutely terrific speaking with you. Thank you, Olli.
Thank you, Lisa. This was pure joy. Very nice experience. Thank you.